This is DW News live from Berlin. The US admits it did kill civilians in a drone strike in Kabul. After earlier claiming the attack in August targeted Islamic State militants, the Pentagon now acknowledges it killed 10 innocent Afghans, including 7 children. Also coming up, submarines spark a major diplomatic row. France recalls its ambassadors to the US and Australia after Canberra scraps a major French arms deal. And the Netflix hit series The Queen's Gambit made chess go mainstream. Now, a real female grandmaster says it whitewashes her achievements in the male-dominated chess world. We'll find out why. Hi, I'm Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to the program. The United States has admitted it killed 10 civilians in a drone strike in Kabul on August 29th. The attack was one of its final military operations before pulling out of Afghanistan after 20 years. Now, initially, the Pentagon defended the strike, saying it hit an Islamic State militant. But now, after investigating the incident, it's owing up to the error.
The Pentagon trying to right a wrong. In a written statement, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin apologized for the strike, admitting that the deadly attack had been a tragic mistake.
The secretary was briefed by General McKenzie this morning at 8 o'clock on the results of his investigation. And on behalf of the men and women of the Department of Defense, he offers his deepest condolences to surviving family members of those who were killed.
An internal review revealed that only civilians were killed in the strike on the 29th of August. Namely, an aid worker and 9 members of his family, including 7 children. The attack happened as the US was scrambling to evacuate its forces and civilians from Afghanistan. And just days after a terrorist attack at Kabul airport, which killed nearly 200 people. Based on faulty intelligence, the US launched a drone strike on a car it believed was carrying militants about to mount a suicide bombing. Now it's clear that was not what happened.
This strike was taken in the earnest belief that it would prevent an imminent threat to our forces and the evacuees at the airport. But it was a mistake, and I offer my sincere apology. As the combatant commander, I am fully responsible for this strike and its tragic outcome.
The US says it's considering paying compensation to the surviving family members.
We earlier spoke to journalist Franz Martin in Kabul and asked him what we know about the victims.
The victims of the strikes were like 3 adult men, one a worker for a California-based NGO and his 20-year-old son, plus his cousin who served in the Afghan Air Force. Both of them had applied for a visa to the United States. Had apparently chances to be evacuated. The thing was, as General McKenzie yesterday said, it was a so-called signature strike. They didn't know who exactly they hit. They followed a car that, according to their intelligence, was behaving suspiciously, but they didn't know the identities of the men. So they took the shot based on their behavior, not that they knew exactly the identities.
Journalist Franz Marti in Kabul. Now, France has recalled its ambassadors to the United States and Australia. That's after Canberra scrapped a major French submarine purchase in favor of nuclear-powered subs built with US technology. Now, France's ambassador to the Australian capital, Canberra, has called the cancellation of the contract a huge mistake. Jean-Pierre Thibault has left his post to return home. On Wednesday, U.S. President Joe Biden angered Paris by announcing a new Indo-Pacific security alliance with Britain and Australia, without informing France in advance. Earlier, DW's Sonia Falnica in Paris explained why France is so angry over the move.
A key reason for the French anger is the way that this deal between Australia, the US and the UK has been announced. Now, officials here in Paris say that they were really not informed about this deal until a few hours before it was announced. And they also say it was a complete surprise because they had no idea that it was part of a new security alliance involving three countries, including the UK. And this is seen here as undercutting France's own Indo-Pacific strategy. French officials also say this is very much at odds with what Australian officials had been saying to France until about 2 weeks ago, you know, essentially reconfirming the submarine deal. So I think France is really, there's a lot of shock here. It's really been blindsided by this announcement.
Sonia Falneka in Paris. Let's now take a look at some other stories making headlines around the world. Anti-lockdown protesters have clashed with police in Australia's two biggest cities. In Melbourne, police used pepper spray and arrested over 200 people. Both Melbourne and Sydney are in a hard lockdown as Australia struggles to contain a third wave of coronavirus infections. Police in Washington, D.C. are beefing up security ahead of a far-right protest. Defense has been reassembled around the U.S. Capitol building as a precaution. Hundreds of far-right demonstrators are expected to attend in a show of support for those arrested after the January 6th attack on the Capitol. The U.S. Border Agency has closed the Del Rio crossing to Mexico as it deals with a huge surge in migration. Thousands of people have arrived outside the small Texas border town in the past 48 hours. Many of them are Haitians. Former Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika has died at the age of 84. Bouteflika stepped down from the presidency 2 years ago under pressure from mass protests and the army. He had rarely been seen in public since he had a stroke in 2013. Now, it's day two of voting in Russia's parliamentary election, but the results are seen as a foregone conclusion. Opposition figures have been detained or barred from running, clearing the way for President Vladimir Putin's United Russia Party. Polling stations are open for 3 days, and there have already been allegations of voting irregularities. And for the first time, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe has not sent election observers. It says limits on the numbers of its staff would make its job impossible to do. The authorities have also made it hard for opposition candidates to run their campaigns. DW's Moscow correspondent Emily Sherwin spoke to some of them.
All around Moscow, political parties are making their bid to win votes. The head of Russia's Electoral Commission has said the vote is competitive, with an average of 13 candidates running for every place in the country's parliament. But some people here feel the elections are just for show.
The result is clear already. The person that the current government is backing will win. I think that if everyone just decides not to vote, then nothing will change. By voting, I want to express my political opinion.
I don't believe in all these games.
Ahead of the elections, there has been a broad crackdown on critical voices in Russia after nationwide protests against the arrest of opposition politician Alexei Navalny. His organizations have been declared extremist. Several Kremlin critical media outlets, like the TV station Dozhd, have been declared foreign agents. Others have had to close. Many independent opposition candidates were simply not allowed to register at all. Feminist activist and politician Alyona Popova was registered, but she says her campaign in Moscow has faced attacks from a nationalist group.
They did all sorts. They threatened to kill our families. Then they set my car on fire. It feels like we are campaigning in the face of insane restrictions and under huge pressure.
In St. Petersburg, opposition politician Boris Vishnevsky is battling two candidates with the same name as him. In a tweet, Vishnevsky complained that the spoiler candidates apparently even changed their appearance to confuse voters at the polls.
What kind of person renounces the name their parents gave them and changes it to their political opponent's name, all on their boss's orders?
Meanwhile, the authorities are pushing for a high voter turnout.
Across Russia, voting is spread out over 3 days, and in some regions, people can even vote online. The authorities say that is supposed to make voting as easy and convenient as possible for people, but critics say it could also make election fraud easier.
Experts say a strong result for the ruling United Russia Party is particularly important in these elections because the vote is all about Vladimir Putin. Last year, he initiated constitutional changes that allow him to remain president. But the changes kicked off a debate about Putin's future and whether he really will stay on.
I think it's clear that Putin is keeping his options open. I think he doesn't want to be president forever and is thinking of naming a successor at the right time. These elections are like a rehearsal before the presidential elections in 2024.
Observers argue that now Putin wants to pave the way for his own future, and that's why he needs a loyal parliament and a smooth election.
The world's first female chess grandmaster is suing Netflix over its hit series, The Queen's Gambit. Nuna Gaprindashvili says a reference to her in the fictional show is grossly belittling. In the final episode, a character claims the Soviet player had never faced men in chess competition. In fact, she had played many over her career and beaten them.
Among all those men,
I don't mind it.
The Queen's Gambit, an international mega-hit set in the 1960s about a fictional female chess champion competing in a male-dominated world where she has to fight to be taken seriously. Back in the real 1960s, Nona Gaprindashvili was alive and playing chess in the Soviet Union. She fought her way to the top. She says The Queen's Gambit has made a mockery of her when it claimed in its final episode that she never played men. Now she's suing for $5 million.
Netflix thinks this is just a harmless story and doesn't contain defamatory statements and doesn't damage her name, reputation, and honor. We believe this completely disregards her whole career and achievements, and we do not understand why.
Gaprindashvili is now 80 and is revered in her home country of Georgia. As the world's first female grandmaster, she broke through a glass ceiling, defeating dozens of men. In one tournament, she played 28 men at the same time.
She made the breakthrough for women's chess and successfully participated in men's tournaments. This was the biggest part of her career. She was very insulted, of course. The TV series had huge influence, this episode in particular, and many people have asked her why she was treated this way.
Netflix has not commented, but has reportedly said it will vigorously defend the case.
It took almost 3 months and a team of climbers. Now Paris is paying tribute to the late Bulgarian artist Christo by realizing his dream of wrapping the Arc de Triomphe. The artist and his wife, Jean-Claude, were famous for wrapping landmarks. Christo had wanted to tackle the Napoleon Monument since he arrived in Paris in the 1960s. French President Emmanuel Macron inaugurated the installation on Thursday. Parisians can visit it for the next 2 weeks. Some visitors have come to pay their respects. Others are trying to find meaning in this work from the self-described irrational artist.
It is very moving knowing that it is a posthumous work. It is beautiful to see that the dream of the artist could be realized even if he's not there anymore. It gives me chills. I like the extravagant side. I don't know if it's beautiful. I'm not sure it matters if it's beautiful. There's the performance aspect that outweighs whether it's beautiful or not. I wonder about it. I find that what's difficult with contemporary art is that we don't have access to the meaning. What does the artist want to say?
Venice is known for its canals, its food, and now for its giant floating fiddles. The Violin of Noah is a 12-meter-long boat in the shape of the popular stringed instrument. It was launched on the Venetian canals this weekend with a group of musicians playing on board. The boat is dedicated to those who've died from COVID-19. You're watching DW News from Berlin. Up next is the documentary looking at the challenges of life in Russia. We'll have more headlines for you at the top of the hour. I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for watching, but do stay tuned.